From the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet, it's time to take you behind the scenes in Smashville.
Cuts across, he scores!
This is the Preds Official Podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton.
That powerful move from back of the net.
On Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, thanks for coming alongside for another episode of the pod. Thomas Willis here in Network Control Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. Brooks Bratton on the road for this episode, so you'll hear him through the magic of voiceover internet protocol, or at least something like that. Digitally, he'll be alongside me for this one. Josh Upton behind the controls, as always. We always say we have a great episode lined up for you. We think we do again, right, Brooks?
Sure, that works for me. I mean, I'm pretty pumped about it. Is this episode 9 already,
by
the way?
It is. It is. You know, I was trying to avoid the term saying it's a jam-packed episode, because if it's not, I think you've done a very poor job of planning out your episode. There's about
We've only got about half of the content we were hoping to have.
Yeah, there's about 7 minutes at the end of this episode that's a real doozy. We have no idea what we're going to say. No,
we're going to play the Jeopardy music.
Yeah, well, sure. We've accounted for your time. Don't worry about that. It's another double interview episode. Colton Sissons, who already has a hat trick after we interviewed him. So I'll say you're welcome, Colton. I mean, it might as well. And then upcoming in the third segment, just behind him, is the Arena Vice President of Events and Marketing, David Kells. And he is providing a bit of a unique perspective I didn't necessarily think that we'd have on this podcast when we first were thinking about the idea of a show. But I'm so glad we got to talk to him, because with the team on the road right now for about 2 weeks, it's interesting to see what's going on in the building. And one of the traditions that they've had recently is the Country Music Awards live every year. And it's a big production. So he kind of talks about that. And then really goes into how the NHL schedule works, setting up, you know, how the hockey events impact where the concerts are going to be and that sort of thing. And interesting to see, as Bridgestone Arena has progressed over the years, how his role has changed to honestly make it one of the most popular venues in North America.
Yeah, we're busy. We got a lot of things coming in and out. I love what Kel says in the interview, you'll hear later. But without all these hockey games and concerts, we're kind of just four walls and a whole bunch of empty seats. You've got to do some work to bring some people in. So yeah, good chat with him. Great chat with Colton Sissons. Former saxophone player in his own right. You'll hear more about
sure.
that. And then the guy we had on last week, Pecorine, had him on his birthday, gets a shutout that night, and, oh, by the way, signs a 2-year, $10 million deal to cap things all off. What a birthday for Pecs.
And that was something that was a bit of a debate throughout the offseason, is what will Pecorine's next contract look like? And there were some that thought, could he wait till the end of the season and be that much closer to free agency before he decided to sign a deal? And as has been the case recently with the Predators general manager David Poile, like he did with the Ryan Ellis, for example, no, he wanted to go ahead and lock up number 35 in net. And I think the deal is great for both sides, because there were some who thought, will his original cap hit of $7 million, as it is right now for this final season, will that come down a lot? And my argument back to that always was, this guy's the reigning Vezina Trophy winner. And I think even for me, just seeing him do it all over again so far this season, especially when he leaves for injury, misses five games, comes back, and it's just fantastic again. Like, you were going to give this guy at least $4 or $5 million. And I think the 2-year term is right about right, the way it matches up with UC Stars. You wrote this in an article, and it says that at that point, after these next two seasons, then you would forecast that the Preds will then know, where do we go from here? Is it UC Saros in a long-term deal? Is Pekka retiring? Is it one more year? And yet he still was nice enough to give the flexibility back for the team of at least $2 million extra dollars this season to, for example, re-sign a Kevin Fiala or Colton Sissons.
Well, exactly. And it's just one more example of a player maybe taking a little bit less than he could have gotten on the open market to stay in Nashville on a team that every player in this organization, every executive believes that this core group of players can compete for not only a playoff spot, but a Stanley Cup for years to come. Pecorine has been here, of course, for his entire career. He wants to continue to be here. He has said that anytime you talk to him, but especially this season when those talks kind of started to come up, the questions started to come. You're in the last year of your deal. Have you thought about what's going on? And I love the way it comes together, too, because it was 7 years ago when he signed his long-term deal in Nashville. He signed that deal on his birthday in Arizona, went out, pitched a shutout against the Arizona Coyotes. There were whispers leading up to his birthday on November 3rd that maybe it could happen. But then all of a sudden we get word a few hours before it actually is announced and you're like, my goodness, he's done it again. So yeah. He signs the deal on his birthday. What does he do? Goes out and pitches his 1-0 shutout against the Boston Bruins. So it all just seems to come together for people like that, like Pekka, with just one of the nicest people on earth. Mm-hmm. The good karma seems to come around. Things work out in that manner for him on his birthday. And you said it, I really love how it does coincide with Yusei Saros's contract to give the Preds not only 2.5 more seasons of mentorship for Pekka toward use, but then also when they both expire, it's the perfect time to look and see what you've got in the goaltending stable for the future. And then just reaffirming that commitment to Nashville, the city that he loves, that's become his second home, the fans that he loves, the organization that he's ingrained in, as Coach Laviolette said, arguably the most notable player in this franchise's history.
I'll say two things on that. And the first one is that the roster flexibility is now there with as scary good as this Predators team is right now. They're looking at about $10 million available for the next season. The key guys to re-sign, three of them are RFAs, Kevin Fiala, Ryan Hartman, and Colton Sissons. And then only two UFAs right now on this entire roster, Zach Rinaldo and Anthony Boteto. So now that you've locked up another key piece, it's like we keep saying it, but it appears that there's going to be another season that this team is going to be that good again. The second one is, saw this tweeted from NHL PR, Pecorine is the only player in NHL history to record two shutouts on his birthday. So congrats to him on that. Let's go ahead and look at Wednesday night's game in Denver, Colorado against the Avalanche. It looked like that was going to be 1-2 in the Central Division. The Avalanche are now a little bit back from that in the first wild card spot, but a 4-1 Predators victory. I want to talk about the power play in a minute, but I think the moment that clearly defined that game was the work of Lawrence Foligno and Andrew Milosz.
I think there was just for everybody, there was a little bit of learning curve when it first came in, but right now our guys have done a really good job. So there's a, you know, they have a method about how they go about their business back there, and you know, they've been really sharp at it. So like I said, tonight was tough because they are close. You know, you can see that it's difficult sometimes to see through the plexiglass on the bench, but it looked like it was going to be close, and they were adamant that they were offside, so we challenged. But you know that the backside of it is that if we're wrong, there's a goal that counts and a power play coming the other way. So you got to be sure, and they were.
And Laviolette points out why I think that second challenge was even more of a gutsy call, and that is the game appeared to be 3-2 on Colin Wilson's fifth of the season. So the Predators then decide to challenge it. As he points out, if it's wrong, not only is it down your lead down to a one-goal difference, but now the Avalanche are going right back on the power play with about 8 minutes to go in the game. Peel the curtain back a little bit for our listeners on this. I think it's fascinating to know that Lawrence is the head of that video coach team. It's only three guys, two that are on the road normally, but he's the head of it. But it's Andrew, actually, that is sitting there, and all game long, he's watching replays, he's watching different angles to see every single play as it goes into the zone. Is this offside or not? Because he needs to know in seconds, yes, we've got a radio down to Coach Laviolette and tell him to challenge it.
Well, and so Lawrence actually, the day after the game on Thursday, so I had been tweeting during the game Wednesday night saying, hey, give Lawrence all the credit in the world, but Andrew Milosz is the one that is reviewing every single time that puck enters the offensive zone immediately, and you've got to make that split-second call. And Lawrence quote-tweeted one of my tweets and said, yes, no, the credit belongs to Andrew because he was the guy that was on the two of those. And as Lavi said in that soundbite too, you've got to make that split-second decision. Do you want to challenge? Do you not want to challenge? And he said on both of those, they were adamant, right? Mm-hmm. Which to me, on that call, the amount of times that you have to look at that on replay, for us to say, okay, yes, do it, for him to be able to be adamant that quickly, that's impressive in itself. Mm-hmm. But there's such a huge part of the team, and it not that it doesn't go unnoticed, because especially in a situation like this, we all start talking about it, the fans all figure out what's going on. But it's such an underrated part of the game, too. I think the way with the rules are now, how much video plays a part in the game, not only just the game itself and everything that surrounds it day to day, but then in game when you have to make those split second decisions. And Andrew Milosh knows what's on the line, and he and Lawrence are in assistant coach Kevin McCarthy and Dan Muse's ear saying, yes, go for it, challenge it, we're going to win it.
Well, and finally on the power play, because I think that's the other defining element of this game. It's so funny. I mean, Twitter's there to complain. Twitter's there to point out every little thing. I think Predators fans truly wish this team won every game 100-0. I don't know if that would even do it, honestly, but I get the complaint. I think what was interesting was being able to watch that game on a national broadcast on NBCSN. So, A, hearing different announcers' perspectives on it. And then I thought Peter Laviolette gave a pretty insightful in-game interview with Pierre Maguire about it. And one thing that John Forslund said, who was calling the game, that I've been saying is the zone entries right now for this Preds power play, it shouldn't be as difficult as they are. Like, that is one of the trouble spots on it. And then Laviolette in that interview said, yeah, it's frustrating. Like, I'm not naive. I'm not just, you know, saying, oh, look at us, we're 12-3, it's all roses, nothing's wrong. That is something that we want to fix. But then his follow-up was the whole point, and I think that's what our point will be, and that is we have the right personnel out there. We know that we do. And the prime example would be it's been much of the same unit for the last couple of years for the Nashville Predators. I'm sorry, if you have Roman Josi, P.K. Subban, and Ryan Ellis as three of your featured blue liners on a power play, it's going to be great. Sprinkle in Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Kyle Turris, that sort of thing, it's going to be really good. And I've liked recently that Colton Sissons has been put on that unit. And just whether you like it or not, you can complain about the power play. That was the nail in the coffin in that game on Wednesday night. It was Kyle Turris making the aggressive play. Yes, the puck technically goes off Sissons for the hat trick, but it was with like 2 seconds and change on the clock. So we don't have a lot of time left, but I mean, your thoughts on that. I think that's how it's been spelled out, is that it is getting better, and it's going to be so much better. And when it does, well, there'll be something else to complain about, but as well, it's just one more thing that this dominant Predators team right now will have in its arsenal.
Well, yeah, that's the crazy thing, is that, as you said, they do have the best record in the league with the worst power play in the league, and it's crazy to think about that. But when you have plays like that, and they have gotten power play goals at times, over the course of the last couple of weeks or so, and it's satisfying, but of course you want more. But to get that one in Colorado in the manner I thought in my head, with like 10 seconds left as they're pressuring in the zone, wouldn't that be sweet if they just got one right here before the end of the period, just to crush the, just completely deflate all the energy out of that building. Lo and behold, with a couple seconds left, Kyle Turris' shot goes in off of Colton Sissons. It took us all to realize it for just a second that it was a hat trick for Colton. But yeah, I mean, you like to see the zone, the way that the puck was worked around the zone, in that sense, a perfect pass out to Kyle Turris from Kevin Fiala, and it goes in off of Colton. So as you said, and as Lavi said, and as everyone knows, it'll come. This personnel, this power play is too talented to not find success as the weeks and the months come. And as we've talked about before, ebbs and flows. Some things are going to be good at times, other things are going to go poorly. Power play not great, but it's continuing to work its way out of things, and I think eventually we will see this man advantage scoring at will as time goes along.
Up next, we've already probably talked about him enough in the first segment, but hey, what's a 12 to 13 minute interview to add on? It's Mr. Hattrick himself. Colton Sissons will be our guest up next. This is the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I ain't no Superman, I ain't no.
Welcome back to the Predators official podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've made it to another player interview. Pecorine, the big guy last week, that worked out well with the birthday and the contract. We don't know about a contract extension, but speaking of birthdays, we missed last week wishing Pekka a happy birthday. So this week, Colton Sissons is our guest. He's got a birthday this week. So first off, before we do anything else, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Make sure we get that out of the way. Yeah. We beat ourselves up over it last week without asking Pex about it. So thanks for joining us. First of all, as promised, talk a little bit of everything but hockey. You grew up in the Vancouver, British Columbia area.
myself and Thomas, we love going there. We think it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. What is it like to grow up in a place where you've got the city, you've got the water, you've got snow-covered mountains just off in the distance? That's a pretty cool setting, no?
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. I think you're not the only one that's probably one of their favorite road stops city-wise. So it's beautiful, and we got the mountains, we got the beach, the ocean, we got the outdoor stuff, and we kind of have it all. And if you time it right, you can do pretty much everything in the same day.
I think it speaks to one thing as well, that the Preds have been around long enough that this could be the case, or that you're young enough. I'm not sure which one it is, but when you were in Vancouver growing up, you had a Preds jersey as a kid, and then of course they are the team that drafts you. What's that feeling like, to sort of be a fan growing up and then have them draft you?
Yeah, it's just kind of a fun fact that gets brought up once in a while. But yeah, one of my first ever jerseys was the old school Preds. I'm not sure exactly what year it would have been, but had the silk sleeves, and I was looking pretty sharp with the with the new team, and I was probably the first fan that they had out west. So yeah, it was just kind of a funny thing, and I got a couple old pictures of me wearing it too.
We've talked to your dad. He said he took you to the store and kind of said, you can have whatever jersey you want, and you were just drawn to that one?
You know what? I just have to trust him on that, because I don't recall it recall it going down. But, I mean, that's probably exactly what happened. It just caught my eye and led to something pretty great down the line, and getting drafted by them one day.
That's too funny. Well, speaking of your dad, he was also the one to drive you to practice, to have a big influence on your early hockey career, your mom as well. But we mentioned him specifically because he wrote a story a couple years ago for NashvillePredators.com, kind of detailing what it's like to be a father on the father's trip. So, A, I guess, speak to his role early on in your life. And then, B, what is it like to have him along for a father's trip for a few games?
Yeah, I mean, it's been awesome to have him around, and just see him interacting with all the other dads and the players, and he just eats it up. He absolutely loves being around and saying hi and just catching up with the guys. And but he had a huge role in my early hockey career. Obviously he was my coach for a number of years, which was good and bad depending on who you asked. If you asked my mom, she might have some mixed reviews of that, a couple battles here and there. But yeah, he just taught me a lot in hockey, and he's just my biggest fan now, and we enjoy it. We get a lot of good memories from this game, and having him out on the trips and things like that is just awesome.
Okay, so I'm curious on that, your dad being the coach, because I remember growing up, like, sometimes it worked out great, and other times you're like, oh, that's the coach's son. He gets all the preferential treatment. Were you, like, getting twice as much ice time as everyone else, or how did that work?
I think it might have been the opposite of that. Like, he was super, super hard on me, and didn't want anybody thinking that or thinking that I had the privilege, because I was daddy's boy out there, and he wanted me to be playing. So no, he was a tough coach. He gave it to us, everyone, pretty good, but specifically me, it was a lot. He coached me in ice hockey and roller hockey and baseball, so there's a little bit of tension there at dinner. Wow. Come dinner time some nights.
Is it, as a non-professional athlete, Brooks and I are very much so non-professional athletes. I'm curious, you mentioned all the sports that you played and then your dad being a coach. How early or how young were you when you started to realize, I could be this type of player in the NHL, or I gravitate toward this in the game? Because I feel like, unlike some sports, you're all on the ice together, and yet a specific player can be just doing something totally different than someone else. You know, like you're a two-way forward, for example, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably when I was around 16, 17 that I really thought I could get possibly drafted, and started believing in myself that I was a legitimate prospect and really could make a push for at first just a scholarship and try to get go to school somewhere. And then it became I was getting scouted a little bit here and there, and then it became I was one of the higher prospects in the WHL for forwards, and kind of just snowballed from there. And I really, really started to believe in it, really just dialed in my commitment to the game probably around then.
Those road trips that you used to go on early on, when you're kind of finding out what kind of player you could be, you've talked about going on those with some of those with your dad, and just playing music in the car for 3-4 hours, and you kind of became a pretty big music fan off of that, some classic rock, some Rolling Stones, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we definitely spent a lot of time in the car driving to and from hockey games, to and from road trips and all that. And yeah, one thing that was always playing were the Stones records, and just brings back good memories of just being in the car with your old man and just cruising along with your hockey bag in the back of the truck. So just really good memories.
We haven't. Oh, sorry, you were going to
follow up. No, I was just going to say. Okay, so Rolling Stones, of course. How cool is Mick Jagger?
How cool is Mick Jagger? Yeah. He's probably the coolest rock star. One of the coolest rock stars of all time. I think they're all pretty sweet. And I unfortunately never got to see them in concert. Mm. I didn't have an opportunity to do that. So that's one thing I'm a little bit bummed about.
We haven't interviewed Craig Smith yet on the POP, so you're going to be our first known musician, I guess, or at least were in the past. So we talked about your music, your love, but you played the saxophone, which is pretty unique. I'll start it there. I mean, let's hear more about that.
It was pretty brief, I'm not going to lie. It was a bit brief, my time playing the sax. I remember I wasn't very committed to that as I was to hockey.
There you go.
But I would have an early morning practice at about 5:30, 6 a.m. on Monday mornings, which was tough.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to go to band practice right after that before school started. So I think that started me off on a just kind of a poor path to keep that going. So I had fun with it. I just wish I practiced a little more.
So there was no, like, George Michael, sexy sax man, none of that going on?
No, it was probably more so me just moving my fingers on the sax and not blowing any air into it in the recitals type thing.
That sounds like me as a kid growing up. I was on the swim team for a year and actually enjoyed it, but same deal. Practice started at 6 a.m. and I was like, you know what? This time I'm not doing this.
For those of our listeners that don't know, Thomas is 6'5". He could have been Michael Phelps.
Yeah, I could have been Michael Phelps, and yet I lacked the commitment. So so here I am.
So living in Music City, it's a pretty cool place to live regardless. But as a music fan, now I know last time I talked to you last year, you hadn't been to a show yet at the Ryman. Have you been to the Ryman now?
I have not been to the Ryman still, which is a little bit embarrassing to admit, but I'm here to tell the truth, so that's what it is. I'm hoping we might have a little bit of something in the works of having a little tour of the Ryman backstage, perhaps, and getting to see one of the many acts that roll through there. So hopefully that works out.
Okay. Do you have a favorite venue then that you have been to? Anything else in Nashville you've been able to experience?
I really like Ascend, the outdoor theater downtown. I saw the Lumineers there a couple of years ago, and it was just a beautiful night, and they put on a really great show, so we had a blast.
So Lumineers, any other folks that you've seen here in Nashville, or just anywhere in general, any concerts that really stick out to you?
I've been to a couple of concerts. When we all went as a team to Carrie's show, that was pretty cool. A couple of years back, we saw her when she was touring around. Most recently, we went and saw Drake at Bridgestone, which was also pretty interesting, my first rap concert, so that was a lot of fun, too.
Fun or interesting? You kind of said it like, it was interesting.
It was interesting in a lot of ways, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, we had a blast. We listened to Drake in the dressing room a lot, and I am a rap fan. I'm a fan of all sorts of types of music, so it was cool to see him.
Okay. Wasn't there a car floating around at some point?
Yeah. And you guys met him, too, right, after the game?
Yeah, there was I believe it was a yellow Ferrari that was floating around in the building, which was, again, interesting to see. But yeah, we were fortunate enough to say hi to him downstairs and take a quick picture, which was awesome.
Well, in the last 2 minutes, let's shift to life on the road, since that's something you guys are really into right now, going all the way out to the West Coast and back. So maybe this is more of a rapid fire thing, I don't know, but what are your traditions, shall we say, on the road? Like, let's start off on the plane. What do you normally do on a long flight?
I'm officially a member of the card table now, which I'm very proud to say. So we play a lot of cards on the plane, and if we're not doing that, I've usually got a movie on deck or a podcast.
You say officially, like, did you have to earn your spot? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, you just gotta wait for an opening, really. you kind of have to wait it out to get in there with a lot of guys having more games played than you and such things like that. Okay. So there was a spot open, and I jumped at it.
Nice. Well, it sounds like sometimes things get pretty intense. Like, we sit at the front of the plane, and we'll hear hooting and hollering back there. Like,
we don't have nearly as much fun at the front of the plane, I can tell you that.
Like, you guys get into it pretty good, then?
Yeah, we do. There's some times when there's a bit of tension, and guys yelling at each other and this and that, but it's all in good fun. But, yeah, it gets a little bit animated at times.
All right, and then I know you guys don't have much free time, but if you do on the road, are you a Are you a Netflix guy? Are you going to see the sights of a local city that you're at or hang out? What are kind of your go-tos?
Probably a little bit of everything. When I'm just kind of hanging out at night after dinner, I'll definitely have Netflix going or watch a movie, something just to relax before bed. But I also like checking out new cities, and obviously I've been to most of them now a little bit. But yeah, just going out and having some good food and walking around and kind of checking things out, it's all good with me.
Let's close on this. What's the show you're crushing right now? What are you into?
I'm going hard after Making a Murderer season 2 right now.
I am too.
Good choice.
Like,
okay.
So I've been on a bit of a binge, let's call it.
Right. Nice. Well, the saxophone career might not have worked out, but the hockey career certainly did. True. Colton, thanks so much for doing this. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
The POP continues in just a moment as we speak with the man who keeps Bridgestone Arena one of the busiest in North America. That's all right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thomas Willis seated alongside Brooks Braddon. We're at Bridgestone Arena across the desk from the Senior Vice President of Events and Marketing, David Kells. Kells, thanks so much for doing this. We thought this was a proper time with the Predators away on the road for roughly 2 weeks or so to learn a little bit more about the arena and specifically what you do. I just said your title, but to the people that just heard that in a brief moment and don't know what that means, What do you do here?
I oversee events and marketing for everything at Bridgestone Arena. So that includes, you know, scheduling all of our concerts and basketball tournaments and award shows, and working with our hockey operations department to put together our schedule every year, overseeing marketing for team and arena events, overseeing event logistics and operations on those sides of things, and making sure everybody who comes in the front door or back door has a good time.
Hmm. I want to zero in on the Preds schedule for a little bit, since this is a Preds podcast. How does that work year to year? I mean, I know over the years we've kind of learned, okay, in November the Preds are likely going to have a big road trip. In March they may have another one. But how do you look at it, like building the pieces together as you kind of pick out when games are going to be and that sort of thing?
We have a booking system from eventbooking.com, and it's a calendar that goes from now until the end of time. So those big things that you mentioned, you know, the SEC basketball tournaments, the CMA awards, those kind of large anchor events – we know when those are, so we populate those out through the end of their agreements. Conferences, those typically book a long time out. Those are 5 or 10 years. We can't do a lot of those during the season because they do take up large chunks of time, so we populate those in, you know, late June, July, August kind of stuff. There are other annual events. You know, we have Marvel Universe Live coming up here in a couple weeks. That hopefully is a repeating event. Monster Jam is every January. That's a repeating event. So those kind of things we populate the calendar in, and then we're able to put our hockey schedule around those big chunks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our normal cadence is for most games is Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So I'll go through and populate those in as placeholders if I notice that there are a lot of events coming in a month. So I'll make sure, oh, goodness, it looks like there's some stuff coming in a month. I better make sure that I lock in some hockey dates. And again, at that point, they're kind of really just placeholders.
Mm-hmm.
Usually towards the start of the season, we'll sit down with David Poyle and Jeff downstairs and work through the next season.
Okay.
So in September or October of this year, sat down with Hockey Ops, mapped out our schedule, tweaked some things around. You know, we have to have an even balance of so many Mondays, so many Sundays, so many Saturdays, so many weekdays to meet the NHL requirements. We submit that to the league. They take their time to map together the 31 teams, and then we get our schedule in July.
Yeah. Oh, well, to follow up on that, I mean, I guess briefly, what's so crazy about that is it makes sense when you think about it, but as soon as the schedule's announced, you guys have, like, already started on the next one. I mean, so you're talking the 19-20 season, because 18-19's already set. You're already, like, a year ahead of everybody else, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to think that way. Again, we all have these wonderful calendar programs. They're online, so when tours – when tours are looking to come to Nashville, they'll typically say, we're looking for a date in this, you know, 14-day window. Mm-hmm. Can you send us your avails? And avails, you just said available dates on a calendar. So we are able to email those to them. And they're looking at other venues in the Southeast, because you don't want to route a tour where you're going from Birmingham to Minneapolis, back to Memphis, up to New York. You want to make it so you're, you know, Boston, New York, Philly, D.C., you know, Charlotte, Atlanta, and so everything's making sense. You're not burning hours and gasoline zigzagging across the country. So they'll ask us for a select window of time. We'll shoot them what we have. And then on the agency side or the touring side, they'll map out what that tour will look like. And they'll come back and forth with us if we have a date that they need or another city doesn't work, and so they're juggling all those puzzle pieces. And, you know, once we submit to the league, it's not 100% set in stone. Mm-hmm. So we can go back to the league and say, hey, I now would like a Saturday back, but we'll submit a Friday back. Because in order to maximize the schedule and maximize the arena's use, I say all the time, without people coming in the front door and events coming in the back door, we're just fuller walls and some seats.
Yeah.
And nobody's coming here right, on a random Tuesday when there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
And I do think we have an obligation to ourselves and our own business, but also to the city, to maximize the dates and calendar and use of Bridgestone Arena. Mm,
yeah. When the month of April has rolled around for the past four seasons, and we expect this will be the case again this season, probably the number one question, at least on social media, is when do the Predators host a playoff game? What is that time kind of like for you? Because as you've said, there are events that have already been booked. Uh-huh. And there's obviously no way to know when the playoff schedule to that exact date will happen. What is that time like for you trying to figure that out?
That's something else. So I got a calendar request from hockey operations in the NHL. So I've already sent the NHL what our playoff timeline calendar looks like.
Yeah.
So while they're probably not doing a whole lot with that information right now, at least they have it. So they know that we've got a couple of events during the first round, a couple of events during the second round, all those kind of things to hopefully to work around. And it's one of those things where you don't cram a bunch of stuff during the playoffs because you want that maximum flexibility to host a playoff game whenever that might be. So we're not going to book something like a Marvel Universe live run during the middle of the playoffs because we can't host 5 days in a row for the potential of hosting a home game. Mm.
Our listeners know we love a good story, so let's hear your origin story, shall we call it? I think that maybe 20 years ago you were running phone lines in this arena, and then look at you now.
I graduated from college with a telecommunications degree, came to work here. I was on the operations setup crew, so building the stages. We built the ice before we even had a hockey team. There are lots of like demo days. So there was the big black and orange NHL logo in the middle of the ice and the two Nashville Arena, the N with the spire kind of things. That's what we would put in for ice logos and put up the glass and put up all that kind of stuff just as a setup, just as demo for when the NHL and potential team owners were coming to look at the arena to see what it would look like in hockey setup. So that was kind of fun back then. Worked on the operations and AV setup crew. Then the Predators came, and our second floor here in admin was all kind of temporary desks and cubes and all that kind of stuff. So I was running phone lines every day. There'd be two new people hired, and I'd punch the phone line into the punch panel over here and run a phone cable up through the drop ceiling, so just through that waffle stuff, and just drop a phone line straight out of the ceiling onto somebody's desk. I dropped Nat Harden's phone the first day he was here.
That's awesome.
So all that kind of good stuff.
That's awesome.
And Nat, of course, is now our senior VP ticket scale. I mean, he's been here since day one. It's crazy to think how far some people have come. And you've touched on it. One of your big roles here, and especially this time of the year, the CMA Awards are here every year, coming up on November 14th. That's a huge deal, not only for country music, but for us as well, to have the arena showcased on a national and international stage.
Yeah. No, that's one of the things that's always fun. Anytime we have a large, like you said, international or nationally broadcast event, whether it's, a hockey game on NBCSN or the CMA Awards on nationally broadcast television, it's awesome. It's good to highlight the arena and highlight the city. That's one of the reasons we exist, is to, be a great billboard and spotlight for the city of Nashville and downtown Nashville and entertainment. And it's great working in an entertainment hub. The folks with the CMA are just down the street. We see these folks all the time and talk about how to make the event better and bigger and working on the festival and the awards. And all those things are just fun. And working on the big stuff is fun. I mean, it's for everybody. I think everybody enjoys being part of the spotlight.
I'm going to ask you to put three different shows in three different categories. Okay. All right. The first one is your favorite show that Bridgestone Arena's ever hosted that you've been to. The second one is upcoming. Like, what are you just excited to see? And then third, has there been a show that, like,
surprised you? I'm using that loosely, but like maybe it just wasn't what you were expecting. You're like, wow, that was awesome, or something like that.
Favorite show of all time, and I mentioned this to Brooks a while ago, Paul McCartney in 2010. It fell on my birthday.
Oh, nice.
And I snuck into soundcheck, and Paul McCartney is a great soundcheck party for VIPs and that kind of stuff, where he pretty much plays like a 30 to 40 minute set to, I don't know if it was 100, 150 people who were sitting down front. I stood at the back of the arena floor. And again, it was my birthday, and he played the Beatles' "Happy Birthday" song, so I just assumed he was playing that for me.
Of course.
So that was definitely a career highlight. And also, 2010 was right after the flood.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of conversation of when the show was going to go on sale. Was it the right time for him to come to town? Did people at the time have bigger worries or bigger concerns than a rock and roll show?
Yeah.
The mayor and us put together a letter to Paul McCartney's management saying, no, that's exactly the opposite. The message we want to send to people is that downtown Nashville and Bridgestone Arena are open for business, and your show coming here is an important part of letting people know that. And they said, okay, great, we're on board. They wanted to be sensitive to the fact that they're a natural tragedy or disaster had happened to the city. How do we appropriately approach that? So that was really cool. That was a big thing that summer to come out of the flood with such an amazing big show. Looking forward to ELO coming in July. Okay, ELO coming in July. I've never seen ELO before. They haven't toured, done a major tour in years and years and years. And they've just got nothing but hits. I know people around the office are like, ELO, and they ask questions, but then I'm totally the bandwagon cheerleader on this one, sending people YouTube links of every single song that's going to be a night of nothing but hits. So that would be a fun one on the horizon, for sure.
Yeah.
And then surprises. Because we had Queen a couple years ago, and that's one of them where maybe my memory wasn't as clear on how big a band Queen was and what they have. Again, hit after hit after hit, just big anthemic hits. It's not just songs that were popular on the charts or whatever. They are what you say arena rock is. They fill a whole arena with sound and bluster and entertainment and just a big vibe. So after that one, I always try to make sure I poke my head in to see three or four songs of every show, because you can always get tied up working and doing other things. And after that one, I go, I would travel to go see that show just to sit in the seats and be a fan sometime. So that one was a good one.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
As a fellow young person who actually knows and enjoys ELO, I share your enthusiasm.
Young person.
And you and I actually have something in common. We'll finish with this. Your media guide bio lists his hockey career peaked in 1980 when he received the Most Improved Player Award from Messina?
Messina,
New York Minor Hockey Association. I, too, am a Most Improved Player winner in my short career as a player. Congrats on that,
by the way.
Thank you.
It was big time.
You've come a long way since then.
Messina, New York is a small town in northern New York. It's up on the St. Lawrence River. A town had two rinks, one inside and one outside. And I distinctly remember being 5 years old, my mom waking me up to play hockey, and I asked her why it was still dark outside. because you figure that far north, you're that close to the border. I mean, it's darker a lot more of the day than it is down here. My mom was getting me up at 6 o'clock to go play hockey at 6:30 because ice time, just like at Ford Ice Center, was used as much as it can be. But I went from the kid who could not skate to the kid that could kind of skate. That's what you did in that small town. People played hockey all the time from when you were 4 or 5 years old. The best kids on our team were the coach's kids, and they were the ones who hosed down their backyard and had frozen water out their back door, so those kids could skate all the time. For better or for worse, shortly after that, we moved to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and frozen water was not really a thing down there. it was more who you for and roll tide than anything about hockey.
His origin story it's been a winding road, but here you are. Now you're telling other people when they get to play hockey and inviting a lot of the best shows to Bridgestone Arena on a monthly basis. Kels, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, guys. Have fun.
The Preds official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game wraps up after the break as we discuss the current status of the Central Division and answer all of your Twitter questions. Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming live on The Game Nashville app. I'm Thomas Willis. Through the magic of digitization, Brooks Braddon of NashvillePredators.com as well. He's alongside for this episode. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for our previous two guests for all the insight that they've provided, Colton Sissons and David Kells. In this final segment, we want to look at the current status of the Central Division because, honestly, Brooks, it's changed quite a bit since we were previewing it just a few weeks ago. But then first off, we've got to get to our every week tradition, and that is giving something away. You can't say we don't do something for the people, you know. The last episode we asked to hear how you guys are listening, when you're listening, what you're listening with. That was really, really great to hear. It seems like we've worked our way into people's lives, especially their commute. I know that's how I listen to podcasts in particular. But this one is easy. The prize we know is great because people have loved them in the past. We're going back to the autographed mini helmet. You can't go wrong with that. So here's how it works. You'll enter through Twitter. We'll then even let you pick the player that you want to sign that helmet, and then we'll get it to you. The way that you enter, you've got to use hashtag PredsPodcast and just tweet us a screenshot of you subscribed to the podcast. And the great thing is you can do that in a variety of ways. The easiest way to see that list is to go to NashvillePredators.com/podcast, but we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Spotify is rising up the ranks of ways that people listen to us. So screenshot of how you're subscribed, use hashtag PredsPodcast, and you're in. And we usually pick our winner on Wednesday. So again, I've said it before, the autographed mini helmet is pretty sweet. I'm trying to find a way to win one myself. If only I could figure out who picked these winners, maybe I could get in his good graces and get one for myself. But Brooks, let's look at the Central Division. The Predators' previous game was against the Colorado Avalanche. They're about to face the Dallas Stars, and those have been some movers and shakers in the Central Division. It really has changed quite a bit over the last 2 weeks.
Well, first off, keep trying to get in my good graces. second off, I think it's worth noting that we're not sponsored by Imagine Dragons, but we might as well be.
Yes. How dare I forget?
The new album comes out, like your favorite band of all time.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, I've been to them 3 times now, all at Bridgestone Arena. It's some of the best live music I've ever heard. They are so talented. And yes, Brooks points it out because my memory fails me. You may have noticed a bit of a theme. The new album that just came out for them, Origins, this weekend, all 3 of those songs are off that album. There's 15 new tracks on the deluxe edition. I'm saying at least 9 or 10 of them are great. So give it a check. Check it out. They're a lot more than that natural song that you hear every Saturday during college football.
They've got more. No doubt sick of.
Yeah. They've got more songs than just that one. So give them a chance. But yeah, Central Division, Minnesota Wild, Dallas Stars. Those are the 2 teams that have really turned it around right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say, now that I've got my music fixed, what was your question again? But no, you're totally right. Especially Minnesota, because I remember talking about the Wild the first time the Predators played them on this podcast, mm-hmm. and saying, gosh, their start hasn't been great. All of a sudden, how the turntables, they are now second in the Central Division. And the Dallas Stars, Nashville's opponent on Saturday afternoon, 6-2-1 in their last 9. They have won 4 of 5 or have points in 4 of 5. Games in the month of November. So things are starting to turn for them as well. These are 2 teams, and we've talked about this too, a bit of a toss-up in the Central Division as to who you think is going to really challenge the Preds for that top spot. Of mm-hmm. course, Winnipeg was an early favorite, and this Dallas team, I think, was certainly one as well. But Minnesota showing what they're capable of, and the 2 that are struggling a bit, Chicago and St. Louis, we had a coaching change mm-hmm. behind the bench in Chicago with Joel Quenneville earlier this week, the guy who guided them to those 3 Stanley Cups, the dynasty that formed in Chicago, if you will. Joel Quenneville is out. Jeremy Culleton, a new young coach, 33 years of age, is in. So a bit of a shakeup there. The Blues aren't off to the start that they want to. It really just goes to show that it's so hard to predict. You hope that you're right in your predictions, and you hope that your respective team that you cheer for is going to do well, but you really just don't know, and there's so much hockey to still be played, too.
Let me put you on the spot. Is Mike Yeo still the head coach of the St. Louis Blues the next time you and I are recording the Preds podcast? They have 4 games next week. They're playing Minnesota, Chicago, Vegas, and San Jose. Yikes.
Yikes. I mean, I was surprised that Joel Quenneville was the guy to go before Mike Yeo, and we saw out in Los Angeles, John Stevens mm-hmm. was axed. Willie Desjardins takes over for him on an interim basis. And Mike Yeo has said in the past couple of weeks, too, he has said to the media, my job should be in question.
Yeah, I know.
So they know, they know that things aren't going well in St. Louis. So yeah, I think that if you're St. Louis, you've got to look at switching something up if things don't get turned around here quickly. Because time, even though it's November, time is already starting to run out.
Right. And my final thought on the Central Division would be, I'll be honest, I was about ready to write off the Minnesota Wild. They really haven't changed their roster the last 3 or 4 years, even though they now have Predators' former assistant general manager Paul Finn as their lead guy there. And yet all they've done is gone 8-2-0 since the Preds beat them on October the 15th. So, like you said, they're right up there challenging the Preds. And here's the thing with the Dallas Stars. The Preds are going to play them 5 times. And again, still multiple more matchups with the Stars as well. So we've seen the Preds against the Jets, Avs, and Wild. But again, they're still haven't played the Blackhawks, for example. Still haven't played the Stars. They're about to do that. But there's going to be a lot of the landscape that could change. Let's dive right into the fan questions. Here's the way that you get included in the show. Just tweet us a question using hashtag Preds Podcast. And then we're happy to take this show whatever direction you want to know, because we do want this to be a service for you, the fan, to see what's on your mind and see if Brooks and I can give you a satisfactory answer. I'll go ahead and ask
thanks for all the questions, by the way.
Yeah, honestly, this may be the most we've received yet for an episode. The first one comes from Zach. Will the Preds continue to shuffle their lines heading into the second quarter of the season, or will they have more of a set lineup? And, of course, he's assuming no major injuries occur.
I think to a point, Coach Laviolette will continue to experiment. Now, assuming you're meaning second quarter, so as of right now, so we're not into the second half yet.
Yeah.
I think as you get toward the second half of the season, you'll probably start to see a lot more consistency. As we've talked about before, they know that that top line, the Jofa line, works really well. Mm-hmm. And they know that Kyle Turris, Craig Smith, and Kevin Fiala can also work and has worked at many a time, although Fiala has been up and down in different points in the lineup so far. I think that experimentation will continue. Coach said that he put that Bonino line together in Colorado specifically to try to shut down some of Colorado's top guys, which it did very effectively. So I think you could see even some rotation depending on the matchup, depending on home or away, who you want out against certain lines. So look to see a little bit more of a shakeup in the games to come, but certainly we'll look to find some more consistency as we get closer to the springtime.
Right, and personally, I like to see change because I think that avoids the William Karlsson situation, which was the Columbus Blue Jackets thought they knew what they had, and yet the Vegas Golden Knights turned him into a 40-goal scorer. So my example would be, you think you know who Cale Yarncroke is, and yet he's been pretty darn good on the second line the last week or so. Next up, Dustin, between Forsberg and Arvidsson, who reaches 30 goals first? Forsberg could hit 40. Could we see Arvidsson hit the same as well?
I think Forsberg hits 40 first.
I do too.
If hopefully, well, 30 first, and then hopefully hits 40. Yeah. But I think they can both get to 30. As of course, Arvidsson's been hurt for the last little bit here. But if those guys can stay healthy, there's absolutely no reason both of them cannot hit 30. And hopefully, Philip Forsberg gets to that 40 mark this season.
I'll take this next one from at House Still for games as late as the other night versus Colorado. What do players do all day while on the road? Well, for starters, I would say it was late for us in the Central Time Zone, but for the players actually there, it was only 1 hour later, and they actually really don't change anything in the sense of they don't push back morning skate, they don't push back a lot of their things. So traditionally how a road game day will work is that the players will all take the bus over to the rink, usually leaves around 10 a.m., so it gets there 90 minutes, 2 hours before they go on to the ice, so they have time to warm up, tape their sticks, you know, go through their routines. They skate for about 45 minutes or so. The players that'll be the healthy scratches then stay maybe another 20, 30 minutes on the ice. They immediately go back, eat a lunch or a snack. If they don't have any meetings in the morning, which sometimes they do that as well, like a special teams meeting, for example. And then they'll go back, and then honestly, it's just a couple hours that they'll have free. And a lot of guys still take a nap. They still like that second wind of, you know, going to sleep for a couple hours and then waking up refreshed before they go for a game. And then usually they're leaving for that game. If it's at 8, like that one was, maybe the bus isn't until around a 5 o'clock hour, for example, but really doesn't change that much. So honestly, we actually have several more Twitter questions that we aren't able to get to in this episode. And I'll go ahead and say that let's either save them for the next one, Brooks, or honestly, we probably could respond in Twitter in kind to get some of them, but we really do appreciate all that we got. We just, We ran out of time. We were too verbose today. So
I say we save them. Let's dedicate a whole segment to Twitter questions if they keep coming in.
I like that. That sounds
because I want to talk about food and journalism and Christmas.
Oh man, we're going to debate our Thanksgiving.
And that's what they are. Yeah, we got to talk Thanksgiving.
Well, we're going to debate our Thanksgiving sides for the next like 30 minutes coming up in the next episode or something. Probably. Don't hold us to that. Something like that. Anyways, for Brooks Braddon out there on the road, you can follow him on Twitter at Brooks Braddon. For me, I'm at Tom A. Willis. And again, remember the best account to follow in all of Twitter is at PredsNHL. That's where you get Predators content first. That's where you see the things that Brooks and I write. That's where you see this podcast. This has been another episode of the Predators Official Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For more, just go to NashvillePredators.com/podcast. Thanks to Colton Sissons and David Kells for joining us this week on the POP. We're live on all your major podcast delivery services like iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. So check us out there. Please rate and subscribe. It really does matter. Thanks for joining us this week, and go Preds.
See you soon, Smashville.